Everybody, I'm Beattie Cohn-Franos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. Well, it's over 10 years now that I first met and sat down with Gary Null, and we decided that we were going to really launch a call-in counseling show that I would be hosting. And what's so interesting, of course, as many of you know, I'm a psychotherapist and sex therapist and author, and I've been in the national radio and television world for many years, and I have a private practice in New York City and also in East Hampton. But the thing that is so interesting is that even though the plan, and this is about sometimes our plans don't exactly work out as we had hoped. The plan was that people would be calling in every single week with their issues and questions and concerns. And I think what's happened instead is that people tend to listen. And of course, then they're able to go to the Progressive Radio Network archives. But I'm still encouraging after all these years that if you have a question or a comment or you want to disagree with me about anything, which of course, that's perfectly fine, that you can. You can call me now. The number is 888-874-4888. And so that if you're someone who's had some challenges, as many of us had during this holiday time, you know, what's so interesting when you think about the holidays, you think about people and families coming together and there's joy and music and gift giving. But for a lot of people, that is simply not the reality at all. And just think, you turn on the television and the music, it routinely reminds us what the holidays, in quotes, are really supposed to be. A time of love and joy and connection to be shared with friends and families. And then you look even closer at the magazine ads and you see pictures of smiling people enjoying elegant meals together and constant reminders of what we can buy for ourselves and what we can give to others. And the reality, of course, is that for many, many fortunate people, the holidays are indeed a time to celebrate, rejoice, and connect with loved ones. And you're lucky if that is your reality. However, let's just look around the world. There are, after all, millions and millions of people around the world who are trying to simply get through their days as best as they can as they attempt to cope with the reality of poverty and war and loneliness and family estrangement and divorce and unemployment and illness. And for these people, they're not looking at the ads on television or on the various different devices. Their daily plights have to do with survival. How are they going to get through the day? These people need to work much, much, much harder to find ways to experience joy and happiness in their everyday lives. And that's the thing, that finding and creating ways to enjoy the holidays under dire circumstances becomes an even greater challenge. And what I have found that the majority of my patients fortunately have some support. But there are some that I spoke with over the weekend that have no support at all. And it was tough. It was really, really tough to get into the holiday spirit of Thanksgiving when you're really in a place where you're feeling lonely and disconnected and alienated from people who love and support you, of course, not just through the holidays, but through the entire year as well. But if you happen to be one of the fortunate ones whose lives and relationships are mostly happy and joyful, really and truly try and enjoy every single moment because you have been given a gift. It's so easy. We could take all of these gifts for granted because I hope that you're able to appreciate your good fortune and practice gratefulness and gratitude every single day. Because what happens is that we really can get easily caught up in our own lives, and it's easy to take people for granted. And we need to remember, and of course, this is a remembering kind of monologue that I'm trying to do right now, is to routinely thank the people in our lives who do support and love us, because these are the relationships, not material goods and not money. I mean, we all like material goods and we all certainly want to have a certain standard of living, but it has never been material goods or money that really sustain and nurture us. So if you are one of these people who is in a good place and has the love and support of friends and family, I really hope that you know and that you realize the importance of cherishing all of this and cherishing the people who make your life happier every single day. And of course, that's not to say that there are not going to be lots and lots of ups and downs, even in the best of relationships, but overall, people who have good relationships, loving relationships, healthy relationships, they have learned the importance of emotional communication and problem solving so that they don't walk away from relationships when there is a conflict or when there is a problem. But then, if we're looking at holiday blues, I have to tell you that I recently received a letter from, let's just call her Lisette. And she is a Southampton real estate broker. She wrote to my Ask Beattie column. As you know, I'm the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach. And she asked my advice about how to get through the holidays if she is going through an unexpected, traumatic, and painful divorce. So this was my advice, and if you want to weigh in on my advice, the number here is 888-874-4888. So this is what she says. She says, "Dear Beattie, I am a 58-year-old Southampton real estate broker whose husband recently asked me for a divorce. We've been married for over 25 years and have one daughter who is in college. I thought our marriage was really quite good, at least most of the time. 6 weeks ago, my husband told me that he hadn't been happy for quite some time and wanted a divorce. As far as I know, he is not having an affair. I was shocked. I'm devastated. I begged him to reconsider and get some counseling, but he was adamant. He told me that he had already seen a lawyer. So obviously, this is something that her husband had been thinking about for quite some time. We have yet to tell our daughter. We'd made plans for the holidays to get together with friends and family and had even planned a trip for just the two of us. I really wonder what that was all about, whether they had talked jointly about the trip, or whether she had planned the trip unilaterally. Well, there are a lot of questions that I would have, of course. And she goes on to say, I have so many questions that he refuses to answer. Can you give me some advice about how I can get through the holidays? Should we wait until the holidays are over to tell our daughter? Should I proceed with our holiday plans? I really don't know what would be best." So this was my response to Lisette. I said, "I'm so sorry for your pain. You were clearly blindsided." And that's the thing that is so difficult. When all of a sudden, seemingly from nowhere, you get this kind of news, and you get this kind of news routinely when people are not on board to communicate and problem solve on an ongoing basis. So I go on to say, it's so unfortunate that your husband was unwilling or unable to express his feelings of discontent long before he got to the point of wanting a divorce. I always, and this is something, this is a reminder to you, this is a reminder to me, this is a reminder to all of us. I always encourage people to check in with each other on a regular basis and have how are we really doing conversations? Because what this does, it always helps to keep people open and honest. I mean, hopefully, about their relationships. But with Lisette, it seems that right now she has no choice but to hire a divorce attorney to ensure that she is going to be protected legally and financially. And as for telling her daughter, I mean, this is one of the painful, painful things. And I actually have a couple of couples right now who are on the verge of divorce, and they have just really for the first time expressed the fact that the marriage may very well be ending. But there's never a good time, and there's never an easy time. And I think that waiting until the holidays are over and pretending that all is well will only put more stress on you. And do you think that's true? If there is bad news to share, do you just keep it from yourself? Do you keep it from your loved ones? Do you wait until a better time? I think in this situation, it really becomes a facade and incredibly, incredibly stressful to pretend that all is well when all is actually coming apart. I go on to suggest that she and her husband together tell their daughter and reassure her. And that's so important. Even though her daughter is in college and she's not a little girl, she needs to be reassured that you both love her and will always be there for her, regardless of the pending divorce. I also mentioned that I would tell your close friends and family about this new reality. And hopefully they're not going to choose sides. And hopefully they will be supportive and helpful. And this is not the time during a crisis of any kind, to try and navigate the situation on your own. And what's really important during times of stress is to make sure as best as you can, even if you have to really monitor yourself and you have to make yourself be extraordinarily structured, but it's really important to take care of yourself physically and emotionally. And what that means in very, very concrete terms is to make sure that you're going to get enough sleep and exercise. Yes, really important to move and not just sit and look at your computer or lie around in bed, and be mindful of maintaining a healthy diet. I mean, many people will say, I don't feel like eating. I really can't sleep. The last thing in the world that I want to do is exercise. In fact, I don't even really want to get up anymore. But this is where we have to be very, very self-disciplined, and why it is important that you give yourself permission to not go through the stressors of life on your own. And again, hopefully you are going to have, even if you have only one friend or an acquaintance who you know will be there for you when you need to talk, if you need to go for a little walk around the block. But if you don't, and there are many, many, many people who are living alone and who do not have any family or any friends, so that if you feel that you need additional support, please, please, please do not hesitate to reach out to a professional. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be in long-term historic counseling, just for some additional support as you figure out what your next move is, and as you begin to navigate a brand new chapter of your life. And again, this is why I really love to do the Ask Beattie show, because I know that there are people right now, you're listening. And if you're like me, this has been a tough few weeks with everything that is going on in Israel and Palestine. There's wars, there's poverty. In fact, a close childhood a friend of mine, Vivian Silver, was murdered by Hamas on October the 7th. So, I mean, frankly, I'm not feeling exactly on top of the world as well. So, to share with you what I've been trying to do, because I'm usually a pretty up person, as you've been probably hearing for many years. And right now, I am going through a low. So, what are some of the things that I do on a regular basis? And this is whether or not I want to or whether or not I don't, but I know that there are things that I actually have to do, not just think about, not just dream about, that will help me stay on a constructive course. Well, I'm fortunate. I have a husband who I can talk to, and I can say that I'm having a bad time and that he is willing and able to listen. But if you don't have a significant other, or if you don't have a spouse, and if you don't have a friend, and if you don't have a family member, I mean, there are support groups. It's not going to cost you a lot of money. And there are social agencies. And maybe you just need to process out loud with someone how you are feeling and what you actually think that you need to do to begin to feel better. So getting out the emotions, the angst, the anger, the sadness, the pain, the depression, really important, rather than denying and avoiding and pretending that all is well, or drinking too much, or eating too much, or sleeping too much. I mean, we really do have to try to maintain a sense of what is, in fact, in our best interest versus what are some of the things that we may want to do or that we may find ourselves falling into that are actually very self-destructive and destructive. So again, having somebody to talk to is, I feel, the number one thing that can help us just get out all of the emotions so that we are not internalizing our struggles and our upset. And for me, after I do some talking, I routinely exercise. And this is something that I did this morning. I was reading the news report, and of course, there is now a short term, and hopefully it's going to be a long-lived ceasefire. And I was just feeling very down and pain, but I know myself well enough to know what I actually have to do. So we're fortunate. We have a treadmill. So the last thing in the world that I wanted to do this morning was to get on the treadmill. Now, if you don't have a treadmill, you can get on the floor, you can do some bicycles, you can actually walk around the block. There are huge advantages in just being physically active. And in being physically active, it has amazing and wonderful consequences in terms of how we actually feel. So I was on the treadmill this morning for 15 minutes, going at a very fast pace, and it helped for the moment. But then I found myself kind of getting back into this state of malaise. So then, what did I need to do? Well, I actually needed to have a nutritious breakfast. The last thing I wanted to do was to eat anything. So I had some oatmeal, and I forced myself to put a banana into the oatmeal and milk. And then I took a walk around the block. Now, did this completely transform My sadness about my friend having been murdered and the wars that are going on. No, but it actually did help to improve the mood, and I may have to do more exercising after the show today. But again, it is about really being mindful. It is about problem solution. Maybe the best solutions we may not be able to find today, but it is a process. It is a process that we need to be mindful about in terms of realizing that there are things that we can do that are really constructive. I mean, I think that this morning, had I not had the show and had I not had a couple of patients that I needed to see, I think that my tendency this morning would have been to just maybe lie around and read the New York Times. And I know definitively that that absolutely would not have been in my best interest. And this is where self-discipline, my friends, is really, really important. And one of the things, and I know that you've probably heard me say this many, many times, that I have really suggested and strongly encouraged to my patients as they go through their days, as they navigate the various different relationships and activities in their lives, to ask themselves this one question. And the one question is this, now, whatever this may happen to be, is this something that is actually good for me? Is having 5 glasses of wine, is that good for me? Well, obviously, no. Is sitting around, no, that's not going to be good for me either. So that we are really pretty self-aware, hopefully, and that we are monitoring, we are self-monitoring just to make sure that we are on track. And I think that if we're feeling really well, there's probably a bit of a less of a need to do this. But I think that when people are feeling down in the dumps, it's very, very, very easy to engage in behaviors and to engage in activities that are really not in our best interest. And I wanted to say a little bit about the difference between sadness and true clinical depression. Sadness is basically short term, okay? We all feel sad from time to time, and typically we are able to find ways to bring us out of our sadness. So if you're feeling sad, if you're feeling low, I would not be terribly concerned about it unless it's going on and on. And I'm just reading from the DSM-5 book, which is the diagnostic criteria that we all use as mental health professionals to make diagnosis. So, for example, if your depressed mood is going on and on and on for 2 weeks or more, that there is hardly any respite, you may very well be headed toward a clinical depression. So you have to really self-monitor yourself. And again, remember that we all go through lots of ups and downs. We feel sad, and these are normal feelings. It's when this sadness takes a turn where you are feeling sad and down and depressed most of the day, nearly every day. Other signs and symptoms to really just watch for and to monitor yourself, where you have markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities. Again, not on occasion, which is understandable and that's normal, but most of the day, nearly every day, where it's going on and on and on, and there's virtually nothing that you can do. You're trying, but it's not working. To begin to feel some interest or pleasure really in anything. Significant weight loss when you are not dieting, okay, so that you don't feel like eating, which is why I was saying it is so important important, especially if we're going through a tough time, to make sure that we move, that we exercise in some fashion, that we are drinking lots and lots of water, that we are getting sufficient sleep, and that we may be forcing ourselves, and that may not be ideal, but that we need to make sure that we are eating so that we are not going to losing a lot of weight. And of course, I might say too that if you're finding that you're eating, so can be a sign of depression, where we're trying, and it makes total sense, where you're trying to fill yourself up because you are feeling empty. Insomnia or hypersomnia nearly every day, where you're not sleeping, you're waking up, you're going to sleep, you're waking up in the middle of the night, or where you're just finding that all you really want to do is sleep and that it is almost impossible to get out of bed. Now, again, nearly every day, we all have problems with sleep from time to time. We all wake up in the middle of the night for a variety of reasons from time to time. But this is when these kinds of signs and symptoms are becoming the norm in your life, and where they're really taking over your life. Fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day. Now, obviously, you're going to make sure that there is nothing going on medically or physically, because fatigue or loss of energy can be a sign and symptom of a variety of different kinds of, true medical issues. So that's what depression can do. It makes us feel just fatigued, and we feel that we have very li little energy. Now, again, if this happens, on occasion, not to be so concerned, but if it's happening nearly every day and it's going on and on and on, that is the time when you really do need to reach out and see a, well, I would say both a doctor, a physical MD doctor, and also who would hopefully rule out that there's anything going on physically with you. And if there is not, then to talk to somebody and to find a mental health professional who you can talk to, and see whether or not there may be a need for some medication. There may not be a need. There may be a need for some supplements that are very, very effective in dealing with a variety of mental health issues. So again, it is about being on top of your game and making sure, even if you're in a low state, that you are at least trying to do the things that are really in your best interest. Okay, feelings of worthlessness, or excessive or inappropriate guilt, nearly every day, where you're just feeling lousy about yourself, where you're feeling excessively or inappropriately guilty. You are beating yourself up. And I know many, many, many people who will routinely do that, particularly if they are going through a hard time, and particularly if they are feeling depressed. Another sign and symptom, diminished ability to think or concentrate, or indecisiveness, again, nearly every day. So we're talking about a minimum of 2 weeks where you just can't seem to find any relief from any and all of these feelings. And then we get to some other serious, more, I mean, these are all serious, but where you have recurrent thoughts of death, not just a fear of dying, where you may have recurrent suicidal ideation. You're thinking about it without a specific plan, or at worst, a suicide attempt or a specific plan for committing suicide. And this is where I always encourage people that when you're really starting to feel off track, Don't wait. We don't want to get to a place where you are feeling so bad that you are actually thinking about suicide, or you, at worst, have thought about and actually made a serious suicide, of community and connection, so that when we are going through rough times, and also when we're going through wonderful times and joyful times and happy times in our lives, that we have people who we can share our feelings, the good, the bad, the ugly, with, and people who will be there for us. And again, if you don't, there are, and I don't know how many of you listening right now have ever been to a 12-step support group where there are people who are going through a variety of issues, just like yourself, and they're there. They're strangers initially, and maybe they're going to become friends. Maybe they're just going to be people who you're going to be seeing, once or maybe twice a week, where you can really come together and commune and express the variety of feelings and fears and upsets and sadness and hopefulness and hopelessness, the gamut of feelings together. But again, this is something that I would absolutely, absolutely not rule out. And another thing that, and it may sound a little counterintuitive, but I have found during some of the toughest times in my own life, working with my patients and at times doing volunteer work, has really helped to pull me out of my own sadness or my own feelings of self-doubt and self-worth. And it is really true that in helping others, at least for a short period of time, we're able to get out of ourselves. And as I say, I have found that in the doing and in helping others, that it really does make all the difference in the world. But I also like to learn from others. And there is a researcher, and I've talked about him before, Carl Palomar. And Carl Palomar is the Cornell sociologist, and he is an author of 30 Le Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. And I'm like, okay, I want to hear what this researcher really has to say. So, Dr. Palomar, I mean, he'd seen numerous studies. And this is interesting because we think about young people who are really on their game, but he found numerous studies showing that people in their 70s and 80s and beyond were far happier than younger people. Now, I'm wondering, are you surprised about this? I mean, you figure people who are in their 70s and 80s and beyond, they're not as physically fit. They probably have a variety of different illnesses. They are getting closer to death than somebody in their 20s or 30s. But Dr. Palomar, he was intrigued. And this is what he said. He said, "I keep meeting older people, many of whom had lost loved ones, been through tremendous difficulties, and had serious health problems, but who nevertheless were deeply fulfilled and enjoying life." So this is Dr. Palomar continuing to quote. He says, "I found myself asking, what is that all about? What are they doing? What is it that they are doing? What is it that they understand things that younger people don't?" And this is what he found. For a longer, happier life, time is finite. And this is something that we all need to remind ourselves on a continual basis. Don't spend our time or don't waste our time regretting things. And Dr. Pillemer found that the more likely they were to say that life passes by in what seems like an instant, that life is short, that they're not being pessimistic. What they're trying to offer is a perspective that they hope will inspire better decisions, one that prioritizes the things that really matter now. And this is where sometimes it's easier said than done about the importance of trying to really live in the moment, without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. So what are some of these elders saying? They said that the biggest regret that they had was worrying about things that never happened. Worrying wastes your life. I wish I knew this in my 30s instead, or 60s, one man told Pellmer. I would have had so much more time to enjoy life. So again, you have to ask yourself, where are you? Are you living in the moment? Or are you worrying about the future? Are you beating yourself up about the past? And then there is a quote from a 95-year-old, and I love this. These are people who've lived, they have things to teach us if we are open to being taught. My 95-year-old Japanese grandfather is a former cardiologist. These are his eight non-negotiables for a long, happy life. Number one, say things now to people you care about, whether it's expressing gratitude, asking for forgiveness, or getting information. Really, really important. Spend the maximum amount of time with your parents and your children. Now, hopefully, these relationships are really good and that you enjoy spending time with your children and your parents. And if there have been issues, and of course, there are always issues with children, there's always issues, with family members, that you give yourself permission to be able to talk through the things that may be continuing to get in the way of these very, very important relationships. Number three, savor daily pleasures instead of waiting for the big ticket items to make you happy. It's really true. It's the little things. Maybe it's that little piece of pumpkin cake that you've been looking at, and you weren't sure, you don't want to have too much sugar, but you know what? Having that piece of cake, it was a little pleasure, but it really put a smile on your face, and you were able to really savor it. Number four, so important. And again, I wonder, if you can relate to this in your own life, and hopefully you do work in a job that you love. So important to be able to wake up every morning and to actually look forward to what you do professionally and employment-wise. And if you don't, I mean, obviously you're not just going to leave your job, but are there other ways and other things that you might be able to do? Maybe take some courses or classes where you can pivot and move yourself into a work world that you might really love and really enjoy. Number five. This is something that I talk about continually, really, all the time. Choose your mate carefully. Don't just rush in. And since 1998, when my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love came out, I have given hundreds and hundreds of Never Make a Mistake in Love Again presentations throughout the country. Because the fact is, if we're looking at the reality We're not doing well when it comes to our relationships. I mean, we're talking about a 48% divorce rate for first marriages, a 67% divorce rate for second marriages, a 72% divorce rate for third marriages. And I think a lot of people, they're not sure why this is happening. They're not sure why they're going from the first marriage to the second marriage, the third marriage, maybe to the fourth marriage, and they're not getting it right. So I'm going to inject something into Dr. Pillemer's research, and there are three things that you have to do. So this is a reminder. Number one, that each of us needs to be in a relatively good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. So we may have, and of course we all have, some emotional, psychological, psychiatric work to do so that we are living in the moment, that we are not rushing into relationships because we are wanting to rush away from our history or our trauma, so that we need to be okay. And as you've probably heard me say many, many times, the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake, and we need to be the cake. We need to be tasty. We need to be solid. And number two, again, whether it means taking classes, whether it means reading more books and articles on relationships, we have to be clear. We have to be really clear about what ingredients actually go into a healthy relationship. And number three, and this is not a promotion for my book, but I did do research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area. And for those of you who've been listening to me for all these years, you probably know that I'm very bottom line. If it doesn't work, I don't have any use at all to sit around and talk about psychobabble. And I came up with a 10-step formula that actually teaches all of us. And it is a formula that I wish I had when I was starting out in my own relationship and dating life. It teaches us exactly how to assess. And I know that assess, it is not a sexy word, it is not a romantic word, but it is a critical, critical, critical world if we are going to keep ourselves safe. So this 10-step formula, and there are a number of different areas that have to be looked at, communication and what I call skeletons in the closet and problem solving. And talking about whether or not you want a blended family and values and goals. I mean, it goes on and on, but it actually gives you and it tells you whether or not you, in fact, are going to be able to make it and have a good, healthy relationship with the person who you believe that you are in love with. And this process, however, it cannot be fast forwarded. I wish, like on The Golden Bachelor, The Golden Bachelor, of course, everybody's talking about The Golden Bachelor, about people in their 60s and 70s who were looking for love. And the finale actually is this Thursday night. And the person, Gary Turner, the Golden Bachelor, is going to be choosing the person who, throughout all of these weeks, that he, at least what he says, is hoping to spend the rest of his life with. Now, what I can tell you is that it is impossible. I believe it is absolutely impossible, unless you happen to be lucky, to be able to do a good assessment in a number of weeks. My research, and I was very unhappy when I really saw the results of the research, and it showed that it takes about a year, not a few weeks, not a reality show, to really go through the assessment and do a very, very careful and in-depth assessment process. So again, it's not weeks, it's not a couple of months. I know we're all impatient. We would like to fast forward the process. But in doing so, we put ourselves at risk. And again, you've heard me say this over and over again. We really have to be very careful, not paranoid, but careful and cautious who we let into our lives. So even though the elders in speaking with Dr. Pelamer, you know, they really were able to stress, and it was important to choose your mate carefully and don't just rush in. So that if you are starting to go out with someone and you want to be sure that you are going to end up in a healthy and loving relationship, I really do suggest that you read my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. You can get it on Amazon and on a number of other sites. And what it does is that it provides a structure. Because when I was dating, I never, ever, ever thought really about any of this in any systematic way. And this was after I completed my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill. I didn't think about it. And it was important. It was really important in doing the book and doing the research to break this all down so that there would be clarity for people. Because in knowing all of this information, I mean, it empowers, it educates. I mean, who is learning about healthy relationships when we're younger? I know that there is some relationship education courses that are going on in the schools, but it's not really all that in depth. So that if we don't make the decision ourselves to become really, really consumer savvy, I mean, we want to be consumer savvy in all kinds of areas in our life. We want to know about cars. We want to know about what kind of computer to buy. We want to know, we want to know a lot of things. We want to know about artificial intelligence. And yet when it comes to our relationships, I think that most people are just so eager, and I get it, to meet someone and to fall in love and to have that happily ever after, that we tend to bypass the things that we need to know and that we need to learn to make sure that the person who we think that we want to be with is actually somebody who is right for us. So, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, if you're someone who is dating or someone who is, you know, looking for love, I mean, not necessarily marriage, but just looking for a, you know, strong romantic love connection, are these some of the things that you actually think about? And if you don't, I'm really encouraging you to really give it some thought. Because we do, we assess and evaluate every single thing in our lives. And I think that we all need to do a much, 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 much better job when it comes to assessing the people who we let into our lives. And it's not just lovers and boyfriends and potential mates. It's friends, it's business associates, you know, our lives, our souls, our hearts, they're really important. And we want to make sure that we eliminate any and all toxicity. And that doesn't mean that there won't be problems and there won't be issues and there won't be conflict in all healthy relationships. But again, we want to make sure that we have such clarity within ourselves about what a healthy relationship actually looks like, so that if we are in relationships where things are starting to veer off course, that we have this knowledge, we have this aha feeling, and that yes, we may of course try to work things out, but if things are not workable, that we are then going to be able to give ourselves permission to exit any and all traumatic and toxic relationships, regardless whether or not they're with friends and family, as quickly as possible. Because I want you to know, I want you to know that a little bit of poison happens to be poison. And a little bit of poison will kill us in one way or another. So going on with what Dr. Pelamer found when he interviewed these older people. Okay. No one said that to be happy that you should work as hard as you can to get money. Now, no one said that to be happy, you should work as hard as you can to get money. I think that money, of course, is important, and we all want a certain level of financial security in our lives. But the bigger, better, more philosophy of never having enough and always wanting more, what that's really about is that we're trying to, people are trying to fill themselves up. They're feeling empty in all kinds of ways. And the hope and the motivation is that the bigger, better house and the bigger, better bank account is going to then be able to fill that hole that many, many people have. And you may think, well, what does she know? What does she know about this? Well, I'll have you know that over the years, I have treated some of the wealthiest people in the United States. And all I can tell you is that the bigger, better, more, if that's your raison d'etre, if that's what you think is going to do it to make you happy, to make you feel successful, what I learned from working with these people is that that was not at all what it was about. They had work to do internally, whether it was dealing with their own skeletons in the closet or unfinished business or their relationships that were not working as well as they had. Those were the things that these rich and famous people needed to do in order to be able to feel happy and less depressed and anxious. And many of these people, I think that they were surprised. They were surprised and relieved that it wasn't about continuing to get more and more and more and more. And in fact, in many situations, it was about striving to get less and less material goods and money and to be working harder and harder on trying to find loving and trusting and respectful and connecting with people who really happen to care about these people over and above their money and their material goods and what these rich and famous people could actually do for others. Other lessons, yes. No one said it was important to be as wealthy as the people around you. Well, I've said enough about that. And no one said you should choose your career based on its earning potential. Again, the money is nice and we all need and want a certain standard of living, but that is not what does it in the end. It is love. It is connection. It is healthy family and friend relationships. And the biggest regret, this is interesting too, that they had. So, well, of all the studies that this Dr. Carl Pelamer did and his findings, the biggest regret that these people had was worrying about things that never happened. Worrying wastes your life, one respondent said. Happiness, and this is a very important finding, and I think it's a truth, and it's sometimes hard to do. At one point, Dr. Pelamer asked a participant to explain why she was so content, and this older woman, 89 years of age, she stopped and thought about it and answered. She said, "I've learned that happiness is a choice and not a condition. And Pillemer noted that the elders he spoke to made a key distinction between the outside forces and events that happened to them and their internal attitudes about happiness. And I think that these are things, this is not going to happen overnight, where you're going to have a change of mindset. But I think that these findings are interesting. I think that they're really, really important. And so I'm going to ask you, what is your takeaway? What is your takeaway from all of this research and interesting findings by people who have lived a very, very long time and have figured out a lot of things that younger people have not? Well, everybody, I am looking at the clock here. It's amazing how the time goes. It's 3:56 here in very lovely and sunny New York City. And I'm going to leave you with my two weekly reminders. Reminders for you and reminders for me. And the first thing is that we need to be very mindful every day of living our lives in ways that are in our best interest. So we need to check in with ourselves as often as we need to and ask ourselves the question, is this good for me? Whatever this is, so that it keeps you on a healthy and it keeps you on a constructive path. And if you start to veer away, be aware of it and get yourself back on the healthy and constructive path. And secondly, given everything that's going on in the world, and of course in many families as well, there's lots of strife, we need to find ways to love or at least accept the other and to really make a commitment to understand and to communicate and to problem solve with people who we necessarily might want to fight and continue to argue with. So again, it's to love ourselves and to find ways to do a much, much, much better job in accepting and loving each other. So I hope you're going to have a good rest of the day. I hope you've been able to take in some of what I have talked about today. And of course, you can always go to the archives. The Ask Beauty Show is on the Progressive Radio Network archives. So again, have a really good rest of the day. And I will talk with you next week and every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in New York City here on the Progressive Radio Network. And thanks so much as ever, my wonderful producers at the Progressive Radio Network. Take care and bye-bye.